Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Acrow FY23 results presentation conference call. All participants are currently on mute. Following the presentation, we will open the call for questions. To queue for a question, you may press star one on your touchphone keypad. Thank you for joining today. I'll now hand over to Steven Boland, CEO, and Andrew Crowther, CFO. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lisa, and good morning, people, for joining us. Very proud to present our FY23 results. It was another great year for our business across all facets of our operation. I'm gonna walk through the presentation that was released on the ASX last night and just focus on some of the highlights of the year and also talk about the FY24 year and what we're expecting to see from the year we've now just joined. So as I said, it's a great year for the business across all facets. We've had, you know, a tremendous run over the last three or four years. The momentum really continues. In FY23, as you'll see, we've had record financial results in every category. Really importantly, we've opened up new channels for revenue with Jumpforms, some additional screen purchases, purchase of an Anisha panel system. So organic growth initiatives that is all fresh revenue is a big feature of the year we've just passed. The higher contract wins for the year is at a record level, and so is the pipeline. I'll point out shortly the absolute relationship between higher revenue wins in one year and what happens to the total higher revenue generated in the business the following year. It's quite remarkable how almost exactly linear those two numbers are. I think, you know, one of the real features clearly in the year is the return on equity of 32.7%. It's doubled over the course of 4 years. I don't think there's many businesses, or certainly in 30 years of managing businesses, I don't think I've seen too many, or have been responsible for too many that have had better than 30% return on equity. And so that's, you know, a great indication of the success of our capital investment programs. And we're very pleased to be providing very early guidance for the FY24 year of a 29% improvement in EBITDA at the midpoint of our guidance range. So just to reiterate, the competitive advantages of Acrow, they've been in place for some time now. We really hone in on these, and you know, as every year goes past, they continue to be stronger. We have a superior product range, and that is just getting better now with the introduction of a second screen system, another panel system, and now as we move into this year, as I'll talk later on about designing and then getting manufactured our own formwork products. The geographic footprint that we operate across, being in every state, every capital city, no other formwork and scaffolding company operates across the network that we do with that range of products. Clearly our engineering expertise, which has been, you know, really the major factor, I'd suggest, in the growth of this business, the success of this business over the last few years, as we've grown that engineering function and we've changed the way the function operates and how it interacts with our client base, and then in general, the quality of the people within Acrow, who I'm really proud to lead. We have a fantastic service ethic, a fantastic team spirit, and all those factors together have, you know, got us to the position now where we are the clear market leader in the Australian formwork sales and hire market, and, you know, we have aspirations to do the same in the industrial services market. Some of the key operational achievements for FY23, I have mentioned the secured contracts and pipeline. I'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later, that gives some colour to that. We did make two very important asset-only acquisitions that did come along with contract revenue right at the end of the financial year, one in April, one in June. So in April, we purchased a premium screen system from a Queensland formworker, Heinrichs, and that system complements strongly the existing Natform screen system that we have. And then in June, we purchased an Anisha decking system, panel system, again, that came along with contracts that, again, complements strongly our existing product offerings. Look, the most exciting thing for me and for the future of the business in this year is entering the Jumpform market. We had two active jobs in that year. We wanted to see how those jobs were undertaken and make sure that the system that we've got the rights for, the jacking system, the model that we've got the rights for, that works, is working well. Pleased to say it's exceeding expectations, and I'll talk further about how we're now gonna grow that business across the country in the next couple of years. irrespective of even just purchasing that second screen system, the existing screen system, the Natform system that we purchased about 5 years ago, had a record year in revenue. So we did $13.3 million of revenue in screens, 11.3 of that was in the traditional business. It was the first time we'd exceeded $10 million, all organic growth. And I'll talk about the relationship between screens and jump forms going forward later in the presentation. Just general organic growth, new products and new territories. It's been a factor in the growth of the business for the last couple of years, bringing products that we have in, say, the Queensland market and New South Wales market into markets like South Australia, Western Australia and Tasmania. That continues to be a very strong part of the growth story of the business and will still go forward. There is still significant untapped opportunities for us in that space. And then the marquee civil infrastructure projects, which, you know, we've become the go-to supplier on most of the major infrastructure projects across the country. Safety, obviously, incredibly important in the business, had a very good result in safety. We only had 2 lost time injuries in the year, which is obviously too many. And, you know, we're focusing on getting that number down to 0, but, you know, good improvements, great focus in the business, proud of the efforts in the safety area. Key financial metrics, so you can see every one of those is heading in the right direction. I'll talk a bit further about the revenue in a second because, you know, revenue at 14%, and so, okay, you're up by 47% in EBITDA, but only 14% in revenue. It's a significant mix change. And when I get to the sort of full operational numbers, you'll see we had a greater growth in our sales contribution number in total than we did in our revenue. So it's an indication that there was a very big change of mix towards higher revenue in the numbers. Strong numbers in NPAT growth, both statutory and underlying. EPS at 11.7 cents is a pretty good number, I think. I'm very pleased to be declaring a 2.7 cent fully franked dividend for the second half of the year, bringing us to 4.4 for the year, up 63% on last year. And most importantly, the return on equity number of 32.7%. You can see on the next page of the presentation how that's grown over a 4-year period. As I said earlier, you know, I've been sort of in management roles in business for now sort of some 30 years, and I know I haven't been responsible for a business that's had that kind of level of return on equity that we've got to in ACRO. Andrew will talk later about our capital investment program, our hurdle rates, what we're achieving, the disciplined approach we take here. It's really paying off, as can be seen both in these numbers and the general profit numbers. Higher wins and pipeline, you can see we're up again 34% in higher contracts 1 year on year. The first of our jump form contracts, significant wins in screens, significant growth in formwork, and then the really, really impressive number is that the pipeline has gone from 83 million to 142 million year on year. Very large factor of that is in jump forms. Now, the story there is that we wanted to set those first 2 contracts we've won, we wanted to make sure that we got those under our belt comfortably, and we did. And it was only really in May that we started actively marketing jump forms or tendering on jump form contracts. We've secured 3 in the last sort of 6 to 8 weeks. And the pipeline for jump forms is now into the $20 million range from 0 over a space of about an 8-week period. The next page is really important to me. We haven't put this out before, but I think I would like to think investors start to understand this and as to why we place so much emphasis on secured higher contracts as the key lead indicator, why we can talk with a high degree of confidence about guidance that we give. We're giving guidance obviously very early for this new financial year. We're giving it 6 weeks into the year. And this is one of the major factors. Because the higher revenue you win the contracts 1 year translates to actual revenue in the business the following year. And you can see it's a consistent trend over a 5-year period. It's not a fluke. This is what actually happens. So if you can see that the number we're saying, that's actually a misprint. It's $67 million worth of higher revenue contracts won in the FY23 year. The 74.5 revenue for the year actually relates to the $50.4 million worth of contracts won the previous year rolling through. So the $67 that we won in 23 will roll through into 24 at a much higher level. I know, for example, right now, in July, the higher revenue that we generated in July of 24 is the greatest number in any single month in the history of the business, and is up about $1.5 million on what it was in the previous July. So you get that roll through of the growth. I'm never going to undersell this KPI. It's key to how we manage the business. And if you can see that number going up, you know we're going to be making more money. Matt Caparella is not with us today. He's having a very well-earned holiday. He's been working extremely hard and spending a fair bit of time overseas supervising the manufacturing of new Acro product. But I will touch on a number of the key factors in engineering. Firstly, just on the evolution of engineering, you know, we've talked about this over the last couple of years, the growth in numbers of engineers. We're up to about 45 people working in the department. We now have a steady state engineering group that focuses primarily on complex design. We have engineers that are chartered. We charge customers for the engineering service we provide. We have dedicated site engineers. We have an internal testing facility. We're ISO accredited, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is an engineering business now. This is the absolute guts of how ACRO operates, is off the back of the expertise in engineering. Where that's going to now, though, which is, to me, incredibly exciting, is that we are designing our own products across a range of areas in formwork. They are designed for the Australian market conditions. They've been manufactured across a range of factories in China that, as I said, you know, Matt's visited twice in the last couple of months, where he's almost, you know, sort of directly supervising, making sure that they're being manufactured to the level we want. They will be at least as good, if not better, than the European equivalents in the Australian market, and they will be at an extremely competitive price point. So, you know, the advantages here are clearly they are designed for the Australian market by an Australian company who understands this market better than just about anybody. We own the IP, we totally control the supply chain, and we have a very strong price competitive position. So this will be a significant change in ACRO over the next couple of years, and I'll talk a little bit further about how I think that's going to affect this year later on. Just some examples of projects. Absolute marquee project for us has been the CYP project in Melbourne, the underground rail network. We are basically the only formwork hire and seller on that project now. Every package is basically being awarded to us without it even going to tender. This is one specific example of work where we designed a system off-site, manufactured or put it together off-site, transported it basically in the middle of the night to the middle of Melbourne, and got it installed. And you can see the quote from the project director of that particular part. It's been a really successful engineering project. A couple of other examples, Cross River Rail in Queensland, very similar to the work we're doing on CYP. A photo of one of our first two jump forms. So we're doing a quite a complex jump form at Albert Street Railway Station on Cross River Rail. This is a more traditional jump form, Monaco. It's a multi-storey unit block was built on the Gold Coast. The feature of that is it's got screens as well as jump forms in that photo. And I can say today, there's basically almost not one screen quote that we are putting out that doesn't have a jump form quote going out with it. These two systems go absolutely hand in hand, and that's going to be strongly in our favour going forward. And then just in this category also, just a bit on the equipment that we purchased in the last 3 months of the financial year, they're really high quality assets. So the screens that we purchased, we're classifying them now as our premium screens offering. Our NatForm system we would call our standard screens offering. This is a more heavy duty, more expensive system that is purpose sort of built for tier one projects. All in the Queensland market at the moment. We're going to be rolling that system out across the country, and we think it's going to be a great complementary offer to the existing system. Same as the Ishibet panel system that we purchased. Again, highly, one of the most utilised panel systems worldwide, all in the Queensland market at the moment, and you know, we will be able to roll that out and work complementary to the rest of our business. And finally, you know, I won't go into the detail of marquee civil projects, except to say there pretty much isn't one that we don't have a major feature on now across the country. Going into the results, so I mentioned this in the It's a key factor here. So I just want to point out that revenue went up by $20 million year on year. Sales contribution went up by $23.2 million. So you can see the contribution went up by more than the revenue because the split of hire versus sales was a significant change. So, I will take hire revenue growth every day of the week. It's the purest form of revenue. It's the one that generates the most profit for the business, as these numbers absolutely show out. And then you can see a contribution margin of 62% is quite extraordinary, and the growth of that number year on year. Very modest increases in costs in both yard and labour for a business that grew as substantially as we did. 8% in yard related costs and 9% in labour. The other is the big increase. That's the bad debts. We've been talking about that all year. We did have a significant increase in bad debts of around $3 million. 1.8% of sales, though, it should be understood. It's a very low percentage of sales. And whilst some people would look at that and say, gee, you know, it's a big increase in bad debt, and it is. What I say is we've had a $17 million improvement in EBITDA in spite of having a $2.5 or $3 million increase in bad debts. Obviously, 31.6% EBITDA margin significantly up again. That's a lot to do with mix. And one of the most important factors for me in here is that $23.2 million of sales contribution margin got us $16.9 million of bottom line improvement, which means we had a 73% pass-through of revenue of sale revenue margin contribution into profit. So I've spoken before of wanting to hold a number in the 60s, so to have a 73% improvement in sales contribution margin being passed through to profit is a really, really strong result. Next page is the sales contribution bridge, which just shows out that $18 million of our growth came out of higher revenue, which is the key number and will continue to be the key number in Acro going forward. And our former division, we cracked $100 million in revenue for the first time in our history, up from $78 million last year. Really good growth in Queensland and New South Wales, very pleasingly in New South Wales. First revenue out of our Jump Form business, about $4 million of revenue for the year in Jump Forms, and then a modest contribution out of the acquisitions of the screens and panel systems that happened in the last April, May and June, about $2 million worth of contribution from those two systems. Sales contribution margin up by 28%, and the pipeline continues to be incredibly strong in this space. By state, look, the key factors here are great growth in Queensland, which is market based. We've got, well, we did have, well, say our market share's probably gone from 60 to probably the high 60s now in Queensland. The most pleasing increase is you can see the New South Wales going from $17 to $23 million of revenue in the year. That is market share growth. Victoria obviously come off a very low base in 20 to very consistent results in 21, 22 and 23. I would say that Victoria has had an absolutely cracking start for 24. We've just hit record numbers in our Victorian formwork business in the month of July, and it's testament to that team down there that's done a remarkable job. So the Victorian business, I'm very, very pleased with. And you see, obviously, WA, another year of growth off the back of really substantial growth between 21 and 22. That trend continued. So great results across every state of the operation. In industrial services, I really want to point out something strongly here. So, again, you see here the revenue's down $5 million, so on face value you go, okay, it's an 11% decrease. The contribution margin's hardly moved. So, again, this is a mixed issue. Higher revenue went up, labour margin dropped slightly, product sales dropped dramatically in terms of revenue, but increased in margin. So we went from $14.4 million down to $9.7 million of sales revenue, but we only dropped margin from 3.1 to 2.7. So I look at this as a year of consolidation in this business. Certainly the profile for shutdown work was not as strong in 23 as it was in 22. It's going to be much stronger in 24. So I know going into 24, we've had, again, really strong start to the year. We've just announced in the last few days our success in a 5-year contract on Snowy Hydro, which is tremendous for the business, gives us great stability in this part of the business, and also gives us a great foothold on that project in terms of other opportunities that will present themselves. We're in the bidding for a couple of other very large contracts and would hope to be making some announcements shortly in that regard. And we really are very strongly focused also on M&A in this space. So a year of consolidation, and I know a year in FY24, it will be a year of reasonably substantial growth. Commercial scaffold, the one we never like to talk about, except I'm going to talk about it. It's up by $9 million in contribution year on year, and it's all to do with rates, and it's all to do with focus on dry hire and getting out of poorly performing contracts. So you can see there, for example, in FY22, out of $15 million of labour and cartage revenue, we made $900,000. That dropped $10 million this year, and we made $2 million. So high, much better quality of the work we've done in that space. But the story here really is around price growth. So what we're doing at the moment is locking in prices with a range of our major customers for projects that will go for extended periods of time. That will give us certainty around our price going forward for the next couple of years in a market that is, this is the cycle part of the ACRO business. I don't back away from it. It's a supply and demand market. But the rates we're getting at the moment, we are locking in for the medium term to ensure the continued stability of the profit out of this division. And the most important thing in the business is people, culture and brand, really. So it is our people who make the difference. We have a very diverse and but inclusive workforce. We're bringing all of the employees, staff, etc. in ACRO, all under the one banner now. You may be aware, you know, we have ACRO, we purchased Natform 5 years ago, we purchased Unispan 3.5 years ago. They are all now united under one ACRO brand. I'll talk about that a bit further, but we are rolling that out in September, and you know, you'll see one ACRO going forward. Strong emphasis now on training, development and an organisational development in general. Got a very, very good graduate program, mostly focused on engineering, but now we're broadening that to include sales and administration. Importantly for a business that's as successful as we've been and for our size now, we've got a very, very good succession plan in place and training programs for right up to the senior executives. I mean, some of the absolute key people who report to me across the business have been getting some strong external training to assist them with their, you know, succession planning within the succession opportunities within ACRO. And we have a mental health champion program. It's important in these days. It's become a very, you know, it's become a factor in business these days and in life in the times we live in today. And having that program in place is an important initiative. Our culture remains as it has for some time. It's about customers being solution-focused, focusing on being the employer of choice and setting and then exceeding those standards in the industry, being open, honest and constructive, and being one team, which leads us to the brand. So we are relaunching the ACRO brand in the first week of September. That's being rolled out at a national sales and engineering conference we'll be holding in that first week of September. So the people in ACRO will get to see, you know, feel, smell, touch the new ACRO brand before anybody else. And then it gets rolled out to the industry, to our shareholders, to our customers, to the general market throughout the month of September. The brand will encapsulate, we've done a lot of work on this, the brand and what it stands for will represent and encapsulate our position as the leading Australian formwork company. And that will be the crux of the ACRO brand going forward. Okay, I'll now hand over to Andrew and go through the financial results.
Great. Thanks, Steve, and thanks, everyone, for joining us. So into the P&L, Steve's already been through the EBITDA increase from 36.3 up to 53.2, along with a very large increased EBITDA margin. So what we're seeing at the moment, consistent with last year, is 80% of our EBITDA growth is flowing directly down to pre-tax profit. So it's a good outcome. Moving down, depreciation was up 16%, which, you know, was on the back of the $23.4 million of CapEx. And also we had the acquisitions of screens and panels right at the end of the period of 23.5, which obviously didn't have a huge amount of depreciation. Our interest up by 37%, or up from $3.5 million to $4.8 million. Obviously, our gross debt went up during the year, which we'll go into in a moment. So our average gross debt through this period is $40.5 million compared to last year's of $28.7 million. And obviously increased interest rates across the board of the economy. Pleasingly, our interest coverage ratio is exactly the same as it was last year, so 12 times. Moving further down, pre-tax profit up 68% from $20 million up to $33 million. Now, tax expense, our underlying tax expense, so consistent with last year, underlying tax expense was 8.3% compared to last year's of 9.9%, and that was a mix between our tax-paying entities and non-tax-paying entities. So from a an NPAT, an underlying NPAT, we increased 71% from 17.8 to 30.5 million during the period. Now, moving down, our NPAT reported was 15.7 million up to 23.5 million. Now, the difference between the underlying and reported, we had significant items of 1.2 million. Now, we've done a large yard change. A large yard movement up in Queensland, and there was a significant cost of that movement. Plus, we've had some restructures relating to that and others. And we also had a, which you would remember from our balance sheet, we had an investment in a legacy garden entity from pre-listing. That's now been written off, so that's gone through significant items. Moving down to significant items tax. We've had some very large tax losses that have been carried forward for many years. Now, profitability has obviously been outstanding, and these tax losses have been used up quite rapidly. What's happened this year is the tax losses in our non-tax paying entity have now reduced below what the deferred tax liability is. So we've actually bought those deferred tax balances onto balance sheet. And to do that, we've suffered $2.6 million accounting tax expense, essentially. So this is not a cash expense, this is an accounting tax entry. But what this means is that going forward, we'll now basically have a 30% tax rate from an accounting perspective. But pleasingly, we still have about $5.5 million of cash losses carried forward. So whatever our cash expense is next year, we still had $5.5 million to offset this. Then we had $3.2 million of share-based payments, which, as I said, got us to 23.5. And from an EPS increased by 63% from an underlying basis up to 11.7. And even our EPS at a statutory basis went up by 42%, which is pretty good. As Steve mentioned before, final dividend announcement of 2.7 cents, 100% franked. So on the very recent 90 cent share price, on a cash point of view, that's a 5% yield, but when you take into account the franking credits, that's a pretty healthy 6.8% yield on 90 cents. Moving over to the balance sheet, total assets increased by $33.6 million in the year, and that includes the full capex of $23.4 plus the very recent acquisitions of around $23 million. Now, we'll get onto the capex in a moment. Net debt went up by $13.5 million to $46.4 million. So our net gearing is 31.1%, up from 28.3%. Debt to EBITDA was 1x. Now that's reduced from last year's 1.1. But what needs to be taken into account in this, the premium screens and panels that we acquired, so the $23.5 million in April and June, that came with $16 million of debt. And very little EBITDA came from that towards the end. If we hadn't actually done that, we would have been at 0.8 times debt to EBITDA. So that was a very late acquisition into our debt. So we're very comfortable with a one turn of debt to EBITDA, but you know, it would have been better without that $16 million. But obviously next year that comes with a lot of extra EBITDA. From a cash flow from operations, $44.9 million. That's an 84% conversion rate. Now, it's significantly up from last year's. If you remember last year, we had a very large restructure of our working capital, essentially, and that took a big hit last year. So we're sort of moving very steadily on a working capital point of view. Working capital now, 23% of sales revenue, steady to last year. We see this basically continuing on into the future. total, if we look out at the net debt bridge, we start at 32.8, we finish at 46.4. Now, what I want to point out here is this really gives a very good indication of what our cash flow from operations actually generate compared to if you saw it last year. So we had 52.2 million of EBITDA. We've got a working capital impost of around 6.7. Lease payments, so cash lease payments. We had tax paid at 3, finance costs and maintenance capex. Basically, and then we had dividends of 7.4, and if we'd actually not done the growth capex and the cash acquisitions, our net debt would have been down towards the 13 million level. But we choose to make those capex, those growth capex and the acquisitions. The cash of that was 33.8. So that's a pretty healthy outcome from a net debt point of view. And now, as getting back to the working capital side as well, as Steve mentioned before, one of our big changes in other expenses this year was our bad debt expense, which was about 3. Now, we need to take into account that was, even though that was an elevated level and we don't see that happening again this year, that was 1.8% of revenue. That's not a bad outcome. Now, debtors, we're overall pretty comfortable with our debtors at the moment. We have seen no deterioration of the debtors at all as we're moving into July, and we haven't in the second 6 months of the year either. Our 90-plus days moved up to 21% from 15% last year, but the majority of that was actually negotiated sales where we've got a long tail of repayments. So they're not actually late. They're not actually late at 90-plus days. They're just sitting there because when the sale's made. We actually had a $1 million receipt of that just in July, soon after year end. So overall, we're pretty comfortable. We have a provision for bad and doubtful debts of 6.4% of the debtor's balance. That's up from 4.1%. We took the opportunity at the end of the year to bump that up a bit just from a conservatism point of view. Moving over to capital expenditure. As Steve said, our capital expenditure program really has proven to be quite successful. We've got a 32.7% ROE. We're continuing to take a very disciplined approach on CapEx with everything we do. So we've traditionally had a 40% minimum return on capital. We're really not looking at too much now that's under 50%. So in the year, we spent $23.4 million on growth CapEx. $17.8 million of that was growth, and 4.6 on our normal staying business CapEx. Now, when we've done the review of how much we're actually making from higher revenue over the period of time on the growth CapEx, this year we're at 57.9%. Now, that's up from 49.8 last year. In reality, this has been impacted quite greatly by the excellent returns on jump form during this year. So it probably won't be that high in the next year, but it's still going to be quite elevated considering we're really only looking at 50% now. Moving over to funding and liquidity on the next slide, we continue to have a lot of support from our banking partner. But the main changes in our banking facilities this year is we increased our working capital facility essentially by 3.6. We took the opportunity to buy some ring lock at very cheap prices during the period. We drew down $4.1 million during the first half of the year, and the balance of that is just under $3 million at the end of the year. We also got an extra $16 million to acquire the premium screens and panels right at the end of the year. Our headroom has increased from $13.2 million at 22 up to 16.6. And when you take into account the cash on hand at 4.9, we have 21.5 million liquidity available essentially at the end of the year. And as I said, from a debt to EBITDA at 1, given everything held steady, I'm seeing that level at probably around 0.75 next year. So, you know, this business really is pumping out a lot of cash. And with that, I'll hand back over to Steve.
Thanks, Andrew. So I'll just go through what I think are the key factors into this year in terms of our growth, and then talk a bit about the guidance at the end. So I'll roll out our favourite graph on civil infrastructure that no one ever believes, and I don't either, because it's going to have a longer and flatter tail. Look, we're not the only people saying this. I mean, I read recently, you know, Boral results that were obviously extremely good, and they talk about this because it's a key factor in their business as well. Certainly some Coates Hire presentations recently, And the same thing we are. It's a longer and flatter tail, and that's just good for everybody. The key thing here is that how much of the revenue is ahead of us, not behind us. And 68% of the 10-year spend is to come in the period 23 to 27. So look, I'm sorry, but anybody who thinks that this is peaked and is about to decline and the whole thing is going to fall over is just listening to media rubbish. It's not the case. We live it and breathe it every day, and we understand it better than newspaper reporters do. In terms of the major projects going forward, these are projects that are starting. One that I want to point out here, because whilst it looks relatively small by comparison, which is the Coomera Connector, a $2.2 billion project, for us, it's absolutely key. Right in our heartland, it's connecting road between Gold Coast and Brisbane. Effectively, for those people who know the area, it's the extension of the Logan Motorway that comes across from Ipswich, and then will now bypass the Pacific Motorway and go closer to the coast to provide a connection to the northern areas of the Gold Coast. It takes away that all that traffic snarl that is there every day of the week. We have already won many millions of dollars worth of work on this project, and it's only just starting. So, you know, you look at that compared to, say, something like a suburban rail loop that's a $30 billion project. We'll get more revenues out of Coomera Connector than we'll get out of the suburban rail loop in the next 3 to 5 years. This will be one of our marquee projects going forward. Second is the jump form. So, as I said, we've won three new contracts in the last 8 weeks. So we had two, both in Queensland. We've now won two in Western Australia and one in New South Wales. Importantly, every one of those three contracts that we've won has also got a screens package attached to it. So we really see these two parts of the business working hand in hand. As I mentioned, the pipeline after a very short period of time is into the $26 million worth of work that we're quoting on. We've only just starting here. And I firmly believe that this target of getting a $20 million annualised revenue over a 2.5-odd-year period is absolutely within our realm of possibility. Jump forms is definitely a key part of the Acro future. And then it rolls into the screens. So we've now got two screen offerings, the traditional standard Natform screen and the premium screen. The premium screens they're more heavy duty. They are more expensive to hire, but there are jobs, especially sort of the major tier one work where the builder or the form worker wants this kind of screen that previously would have cut us out of that part of the market. We're experiencing tremendous growth in this area. We've never done a screens job in Western Australia, for example. We've now got two off the back of the work that we've won with Jump Forms. So we are absolutely, we've got three at the moment operating in Adelaide. We are now absolutely a national screens provider. This is a high quality, high margin product. And as I said, goes absolutely hand in hand with our jump forms, another key part of our growth. And then the thing that I think we've yet to see the benefit of, but it's about to really kick in a big way, certainly towards the second half of this financial year into the next year, is the product development work, bringing products to the Australian market that we've designed for our conditions, where we've got control of the supply chain, we've got control of the pricing point, and we know they're going to be as good, if not better, than our European equivalents. So the major one that we're focusing on at the moment is AcroDeck. It's a basic panel decking system for commercial formwork. We haven't got one deck in Australia yet at the moment, and we've got a $1 million order in South Australia for the system. So as an example, that's a South Australian order, not New South Wales, Victoria, Queensland, probably the smallest market in the country, and we've got just under $1 million order. This will be a significant change to the Acro business going forward. And we'll be rolling this out as part of our new brand launch in September. We'll have products that we'll be able to show our customers across all of the country. As I mentioned, our IP, our design, we control the supply chain, we control the price, and it's going to be a great avenue of further growth for Acro. And then also industrial services, as I mentioned, stable year in 23, but absolute growth expected in 24. We've really grown this business dramatically over a 2 or 3 year period to get where we've got in 22 and 23. Now we're going to go to the next level. So Snowy 2 was an absolute key to that. You know, we've announced $56 million worth of work over 5 years. It will be more than that. We believe that package of work alone, with some additions that will happen along the way, will potentially be as much as $75 million worth of work. There are some significant other contracts that we are currently bidding on and expect to have some success shortly that we will probably be announcing to the market. And we are very active in M&A in this space. Now, folks, we've broadened our scope. We're always looking at Western Australia and South Australia. We now think the North Queensland market is also very interesting here. So we don't operate to any great degree out in that area, but it's got similar sort of market characteristics to Western Australia and South Australia, so we've got an active interest in that part of the world. All of that leads to our outlook and guidance. We're guiding to revenue between 190 and 200, up from 168, and we're guiding to EBITDA of midpoint 68.5, so up 29% on FY23. We're doing this after 6 weeks. This is underpinned by the secured high revenue contracts that we know that has an uplift of 35% compared to last year. The asset acquisitions that we made at the tail end of last year, as they roll through, will contribute an additional circa $8 million of EBITDA this year to what they did in 23. The revenue and profit that will come through the 23 capital program as we go, the 24 capex of 23.5 that will generate growth and through the, as we go through the year. And I want to point out too that in here, you know, net debt and debt to EBITDA is going to decline. So, you know, all things being equal, without any other dramatic acquisition or anything else that may or may not happen in our business, just based on our growth profile and our capex at the moment, we will see a reduction. So, I mean, I guess in summary, this is a business that's doing better than 30% return on equity. It's doing better than 30% EBITDA margins, more like 35%. It's guiding the 30% growth in its profit. It's getting a 57% return on its capital investment, and it's got a one turn of debt to EBITDA probably declining to under 0.8. So I think it's a pretty healthy business and a business that we're very happy with, and we look forward to another successful year in FY24. And now I'm happy to hand over for questions.
Thank you, Stephen and Andrew. We will now commence the Q&A session. To queue for a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. That is star 1 on your telephone keypad to ask a question. Our first question comes from Ed Woodgate from Jarden. Ed, you are now unmuted. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, guys. Can you hear me okay?
Yep. Well, good, Ed. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Great result. Thanks for taking the question. So just wanted to clarify one of your comments regarding the July high revenue, saying that was like up $1.5 million versus the PCP. Does that include any of the new contract with Snowy Hydro? I presume not. Just wanted to confirm.
Snowy Hydro contract is not high revenue, and it's all labour.
Okay, labour high though, right? So yeah, but okay.
No, but when we talk about higher revenue, it's higher revenue. It's the higher for the product, right? The Snowy contract that we've announced doesn't have any product hire in it. It's all labour.
Okay, noted. That's helpful. Thank you. And then you just kind of talk through it again with your how you bridge the your guidance. I mean, if I kind of go through it on the back of the envelope, it feels like maybe it's a little bit on the lower end just with Heinrich's screen acquisition, you know, the $20 million jump form pipeline that you're saying, the higher revenue momentum, Snowy, like a bunch of other things. So I was just wondering, is there some sort of mix shift going on there within the revenue line? Or has there been any softening in the core revenue line items that contribute so strongly in 23? But it's just kind of conservatism.
We're 6 weeks into the year, I think is the first point that I'll make.
Yeah.
Second point is that it's impossible for us to guide for products, large product sales that may or may not happen. We can't do it. I won't do it.
Yeah,
we provide, and it's always a factor in, yeah, last year, for example, we did announce it. We made a sale to Clough Engineering in May that generated a couple of million dollars of EBITDA in one hit. Now, I don't have a forecast sale of that size in our current guidance because I just don't know. I mean, there's plenty of irons in the fire, but I can't put that into a forecast. It's one of the reasons why we do have as many sort of changes that we do across the year as those things materialise. So that's very much the case.
So, look, we're comfortable where we're guiding at the moment. I think, you know, we've got to be, again, mindful of the fact that we're 6 weeks into the year.
Yeah, sure. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And, always prefer conservatism. Okay, and then just finally, so you might have talked about it, but can you just provide some colour on the growth capex for 24? Should we be expecting that to come down, or?
No, we provided a number, and that's the number, that's our budget number. The FY24 growth capex number that we provided is very heavily slated towards jump forms and the new AcroDeck product. Sorry, I'll just say something on jump forms. You mentioned that in your why aren't you guiding more? There's like a 6 month lead time from winning contracts to getting revenue in jump forms. We didn't start quoting again till May. Right? So I think we've always alluded to the fact there was going to be a gap. We had those first two contracts that we won. We wanted to make sure the system worked properly. It does. And then we started getting active. That wasn't till May. So you're going to have a very back-ended growth in our jump form revenue. At the moment, it's actually quite low. As I talked to you today, the revenue per month at the moment in jump forms is quite low. But then you start winning work, you get into an operating rhythm, and then off she goes. So it's actually the second half of this year, and then really in the next financial year, where you're really going to see the growth coming out of jump form.
Yeah, makes sense. Got it. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you for the time, and yeah, congrats on a good result. Cheers.
Thank you, Ed. Our next question comes from Rashil from Ord Minute. Please go ahead, Rashil.
Morning, Steve and Andrew. Thanks for taking my questions. Couple from me. Just regarding, you mentioned in your presentation that about 60% of the uplift in the total contribution of gross profit was from market share gains and new product development. Just wondering if you can provide a little bit more colour there, particularly on the market share side of things. I know during the presentation, Steve, you alluded to Queensland being sort of high 60% market share now from about 60%. I'm just keen to get your thoughts on maybe just your market share gains in some of the key states. I know New South Wales have been underrepresented in, so maybe just some updates on those key states as well from a market share perspective.
Well, Queensland, in our traditional formwork market in Queensland, we've maintained, if not grew, our market share. But one of the things that changed this year is the $4 million for the jump form revenue was all in Queensland. The screens acquisition and the panel acquisition is all in Queensland. So they are new products in the Queensland market where we're already very strong. So that's part of the growth story of Queensland. That's got nothing to do with cycles. That's got nothing to do with simple infrastructure. It's got to do with, you know, products that we've now bought or introduced into a market where we're already strong. New South Wales is market share. At the moment, New South Wales and Victoria are both getting market share gains. They are not really benefiting from new products into those markets. That's going to be one of the stories for us in FY24. We'll be bringing products, the AcroDeck product, for example, that we don't have anything like that system in New South Wales and Victoria. It's a major opportunity in those markets for us. South Australia, I didn't even mention South Australia. South Australia in the months of June and July has done record high revenue by miles. To give you an indication, and these things, they're not massive numbers maybe, but we would consider $300,000 a month to be a good month in South Australia in high revenue traditionally. That would be around our budget number. We did over $500,000 in June and July in that market. That's an incredible result. And it's got absolutely nothing to do with cycles. That's all to do with market share gains and new products in those markets. And then Western Australia, same story. We've doubled our formwork revenue in Western Australia over a two-year period. Nothing to do with cycle, nothing to do with anything except market share growth and new product development. We've done the work and had a look at it. The vast majority of our improvement in profitability is coming organically. It's not coming out of market activity.
Perfect. Thank you very much for that. And just on the working capital, Andrew, maybe it's a question for you, but the working capital you mentioned there was steady around about 23% of sales. I know in the past, the last year, you mentioned that the target was 18 to 20%. So just wondering, has that target changed? And are you able to just provide a little bit more color on, you know, what your expectations are for FY24 in terms of working capital as a percentage of sales?
Yeah, no, it hasn't changed. Like we obviously always trying to get it down. If you actually have a look at the breakup, and it's not in the preso, it's in the financials, our debtors basically went up according to the, I think it was 14%, which is pretty similar to what sales were. Our inventory actually went down from last year, so that was part of Matt organising this. But the big decrease was trade creditors in the year. We actually reduced our trade creditors by $6 million. There was a few reasons for that. We had some long dated AP payments we had to make for CapEx, et cetera. So overall, you know, $6.7 million increase. It was relatively in line with activity increases. Look, it, yeah, 18 to 21, 22%. I don't see any blow in working capital whatsoever. I don't think debtors will actually, I mean, debtors are going to go up by, according to sales. Creditors will, you know, we try to manage our creditors to extend them as much as we can. But it's going to be somewhere in that line, 18 to 20.
In fact, Andrew, we've just negotiated a significant change in trading terms with our biggest timber supplier. So we haven't really run that through the numbers yet to see what effect it's had, but it's substantial.
Yeah, that's very good cash.
It's very good. So this is our timber supplier who, we probably spend $1 million a month.
Yeah.
So their terms of trade have changed from 30% deposit and then the balance 30 days from bill of lading to now being everything paid 60 days after bill of lading. That's a significant change to the working capital profile of that particular supplier at about $1 million a month.
Perfect. Now, thank you very much for that. It's all clear. Just one last question for me, just regarding guidance and sort of following on from the previous analyst. But Steve, in your presentation, you mentioned a couple of new contracts towards the end there that you thought the firm, that ACRO might be close to announcing. I'm just wondering if you can provide a little bit more colour on those in terms of the division it might sit in, whether it be formwork or industrial services and so on. And then secondly, do you have any of those prospective contracts included within your guidance, or would those be incremental to what you've announced to the market today?
No, we've got one substantial industrial services contractor that we're very close to, but not in our guidance. And watch this space, Rachel. I mean, we were hoping we would have had it done by now. We're in the mobilisation phase, but they just haven't actually given us the bit of paper. But I think it's a reasonably substantial contract over about an 18-month period.
Perfect. So I might just add on one last question to that. Just the new products that you mentioned as well. Do you have much contribution within your guidance from some of the new products that you've mentioned today?
No.
Okay. Perfect. That's all from me. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Rachel. Our next question comes from Alex Liu of Morgans Financial. Alex, you are now unmuted.
Yeah, thanks. Morning, Steve. Morning, Andrew. Can I just start with new product development, please? And, you know, you mentioned PowerShore and also Acrodec, and can you just talk about how the new products, or how you think about new products in the future, and how that complements the existing product range, please?
Well, Acrodec is the prime example right now, Alex. So we had a system in place that we used to buy from Ulmer. Then we have the Ishibek system, and they're all the same application, right? Now, so this is basically these are panels that sit under, you know, the pouring of a large slab of concrete. Think about a car park slab, or just any, you know, sort of multi-unit, you know, high rise. Anywhere where you've got a large slab of concrete being poured, this is the most basic, fundamental commercial formwork product. So we have designed now our own product that is compatible with the system that we already have. This is like meat and potatoes formwork, high utilisation meat and potatoes formwork that will come in at very good price, controllable in terms of supply chain, and you know we're not at the mercy of a European supplier who sets the price and then tells us how much gear they're going to supply us. We've got our cost control of our own destiny in this space. So, you know, we don't even have a product in either New South Wales or Victorian markets at the moment that does anything in this space. We've got a Queensland business where we would probably generate in the vicinity of $8 million a year of hire in this sort of category, and the New South Wales and Victoria markets are far bigger than Queensland, and we have zero revenue in New South Wales and Victoria in that space at the moment.
Okay, thanks for that. Yeah, go on, Steve.
No, I'm just saying, as an example, that's, you know, we've got high ambitions for what that product particularly can do for us in New South Wales, Victoria, South Australia, Western Australia.
Okay, great. In terms of sourcing the product, can you just maybe just talk about, I guess, design, sourcing, supply chains and things like that, and is that a lot easier, or supply chains are a lot more or less constrained than, I guess, 12 months ago?
Oh, it's chalk and cheese, mate. It's absolutely chalk and cheese. So prices have come down significantly, shipping times have come down. You know, we were sort of in the midst of COVID, it was taking you 3 months to get something, and that takes you 3 months. So, sorry, 3 months, making more like 5 or 6. But we're down to sort of an 8-week, 10-week turn out of China. And we're on the front foot with this now. I mentioned that Matt Caparella has been to China twice in the last couple of months. He was there last week for 3 days. I said to him last week, you better get your frequent flyer points rolling, mate, because he's going to be spending a lot of time in China with the manufacturers, just making sure the quality is what we want and the timing is what we want. You know, we're becoming very, very key to what we do going forward.
Okay, that's good. And just one last thing for me, industrial services. So just, you know, mentioning active M&A pipelines, enter new markets and territories. So can you just maybe just talk about that a little bit more, please?
Oh, we want to grow the business. I've made it clear for a long period of time, Alex. So what I'd really like to see is probably a balanced portfolio in the ACRO revenue of industrial services and formwork. You know, I used to say I'd like to see 100 million in each. Well, we've already hit 100 million in formwork, so maybe I'd like to see 150 million in each. I don't know, but yeah, we definitely want to grow it. We've now, we focus primarily on, pretty much on power stations and shutdowns in that space and sort of southeast Queensland to a degree, and then into New South Wales and the Hunter Valley, and then obviously now the Snowy. But we've just seen some opportunities recently in North Queensland open up, and then obviously South Australia and Western Australia are very strong markets. So, we like the space. We know we're good at it. We like the margins we're making, and it's a nice counterbalance to the higher margin formwork business that still has a degree of cyclicality, despite what I'm saying elsewhere, which I don't think we're in that cycle at the moment. There's no doubt formwork margins are better than industrial services, but the industrial services business does, as example, Snowy, give you the opportunity to get very, very long-term, good margin contracts that you can lock away and give you, strong security of earnings over, extended periods of time.
Great. Thanks a lot. I'll leave it there.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you, Alex. Your next question comes from John Price of Coinda Corporation. John, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Thank you, and congratulations on the results. I mean, you've painted a very positive picture, and I'm just wondering, as you look ahead, what do you see as primary risks to the business? And I guess if you'd be kind enough to phase that by looking at each of the divisions.
Thanks, John. There's still an overarching risk around bad debts, right? So that's the absolute thing that comes front of mind to me. I mean, Andrew, you can comment on this, but we think the environment today is actually far better than it was 12 months ago. What you've got in that space, if you think about this, you had a number of contractors that entered into contracts pre-COVID at lump sums on very small margins, and then COVID hit, and they were stuck with contracts that they couldn't get better rates on, with lots of lost hours, like enormous lost hours on projects of labour where they couldn't recover, and then that rolls through to the situation that we've seen in the building industry in general. People are not quoting that way going forward. You know, there's a definite shift in that in terms of, contractors are not taking the risks that they were taking previously, right? But that still is the overarching. I still see that, Andrew. I think that's the overarching risk, right? And when I say risk, we hope to be able to get that number down this year to where we were last year. We had a bad year last year by comparison, but still well within comfort levels. Look, across the other divisions, the industrial services, I can't give you one, I'm afraid, because it's not that kind of business. I can't give you what I would classify. I mean, maybe is there a risk that we find if we can't get the labour required to do some of the contracts? Hasn't been an issue for us to date. Certainly not an issue for us at Snowy. In formwork infrastructure, it's not going backwards. I'll say pretty boldly, despite the knee-jerk of the media and what some governments say, it's not going backwards. We see it fiddled every day. So I don't see a risk in the short to medium term there. In the scaffold business, where we started to make very good margins off the back of supply and demand, that can change. And that can change fairly quickly. So, you could see commercial scaffold earnings revert to sort of somewhere between where they are today and where they used to be, which is why what we're doing at the moment is locking in prices for at least the next couple of years to be able to give us some cushion there. But I guess the biggest one is still the general construction industry and the in terms of its debt profile. That's still, I think, the thing that we are most, we need to watch the closest.
Just one other, if I may. You've spoken in terms of the innovation you're incorporating in the business. When you look at your competition, what do you see there that could be potentially a threat to your growth of sales?
Well, our competitors in formwork are all European manufacturers, and they innovate. So we shouldn't kid ourselves. That's what their business is. They're sausage factories who pump out gear, and they need to sell them somewhere. And they do innovate, right? But they don't design products for the Australian market. They design products for the European market. Their Australian businesses are a spit in the ocean of what they do in their total business. So, what we're doing is designing our products for our market, and we're already getting great feedback from formworkers here about, thank God there's now an Australian company doing this, we don't have to sort of be dictated to by European suppliers. So we shouldn't kid ourselves they won't innovate, because they do. It's part of what they do. But they are designing for the European market, not for the Australian market.
Thank you, Steve, and great result. Best wishes for the year ahead.
Thanks, John. Cheers.
Thank you, John. Your next question comes from Michael Mastonov, a shareholder. Please go ahead, Michael.
Yes, hi, Steve and Andrew. Just following on from John's question, really your answer on bad debts, I wonder, is the result that you've had concentrated in one division? That's sort of part A. But secondly, I would imagine, given the growth story and your positioning in the market, that the due diligence you're undertaking on potential customers now is much, much stronger, and you've got, I suspect, the ability to be much more selective as to which customers you work for. Can you comment on those two points?
Andrew.
That's a great question, actually. It's probably something that I should have mentioned during my part. So one of the reasons we did have some of the, well, not all of them, but some of the bad debts is the situation has changed a lot. So a lot of those bad debts, particularly the big one we had, I won't say it was relaxed, but we had very small bad debts a couple of years ago. So we're probably quite relaxed in our application of the credit policy, I think it would be fair to say. Yeah. Because we're making money, we're making no bad debts. And then the situation changed rapidly with COVID and then the flooding in Queensland, and these guys were on fixed contracts. So some of these guys went bad pretty quickly and with relatively large balances. So in the last year, the application of our credit policy, we haven't changed it. We've just applied it much harder. So as you said, when a new customer comes on, we're much harsher with what sort of credit we give them. If we can't be, our customers, they are a specific type of groups, but what we can do, if they don't have the credit that we're happy with, we can just make them pay more up front, or we get bank guarantees and so forth. So the answer to your question is essentially our credit policy application is much harder, still very commercial, but much harder, and that's why it gives us some comfort that we're our bad debt profile will be much lower.
And Michael, to ask your first part of the question, it's the commercial formwork market primarily. So it's the commercial formworker who's working for a builder who locks himself into a fixed sum contract to do a job and then gets stuck with hours they can't recover because of COVID and flooding or other things.
Yep. Okay. That's great. The second question I had, you've mentioned, or you made the announcement on Snowy 2.0, and you did also mention just before about the risk of attracting labour. You seem to suggest that that's not going to be an issue. Can you give an indication how many sort of people, on average, are you going to require for the Snowy contract? And it sounds like you don't see it being too difficult to attract that labour. And given it's a 5-year contract, do you have any escalation clauses in that contract, or are you tied to a rate at the moment that you're going to have for 5 years?
Thank you, because they're very good questions, Mike. So firstly, we've got about 20 guys there at the moment who work on sort of rolling 4-day shifts. That number will probably double over a period of time. We're not concerned about attracting the right people. Look, it's interesting with this particular case. So we are an incumbent supplier at Snowy under a very short-term contract that's now been let for a long period of time. We negotiated an EBA with the CFMEU for that site in conjunction with Snowy, with the Future Generation. Our deal with Future Generation is not a lump sum. Every hour we charge for, or every hour we pay the labour, we get a margin on top of that hour. Our contract is locked in with the rise and fall that we have locked into our EBA with our employees. So it's absolute 100% pass through for every dollar that we pay our employees. So it's, there's basically no risk on the margin that we've got locked in. I don't care what's going to be every month now for the next 5 years.
Right. Okay. And that contract, you said, doesn't include any equipment hire. I presume you are hiring equipment into that project. Is that done under a separate deal, or is that done piecemeal, tender by tender?
So they don't hire on that job, they buy. So we would have sold them, and we didn't sell much this year. That's one of the reasons why the product sales dropped off in the industrial business. We would have sold about $5 million worth of scaffold equipment to them over the course of the last 2.5 years.
Right.
And they will continue to buy from us. So we know, I mean, as I look at my pipeline at the moment, I've got sales forecast to be made to Snowy or Scaffold at relatively small levels for the next few months, but we know that's going to have to pick up as the job continues to escalate. So yeah, they don't hire, they buy.
Just, okay, that's fantastic. Just a final comment. That tells us that Snowy Hydro won't be finished till at least 2028, despite all the, other proclamations.
Keep going.
All right. Look, thanks for that. That's great. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Our next question is from Graham Douglas from Desire Superannuation. Please go ahead, Graham.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you very much for a great result. It's really pleasing to see, and it's good to see that there's a very good runway ahead of us as well. My question was actually about the bad debts, but you've pretty well covered that off now, so I don't have any other questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Ray. Cheers.
There are currently no more questions. If ever anyone would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. As there are no further questions, I'll now hand back to Stephen Boland, CEO, and Andrew Crowther, CFO, for closing remarks.
Okay, thanks very much for taking the time today to hear our presentation, and thanks for the questions. They're insightful thanks. I really appreciate that. So again, proud of the results, very confident with our future, and look forward to continue to update our shareholders and interested parties on our progress. Thanks very much. Cheers.
That concludes the ACRO FY23 results call. You may now disconnect.